There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you along. Live local talk this hour. Our phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. That's pretty interesting here. The more on this, the Alex Jones thing, probably more attention. This is probably working to his benefit big time with the, like every other group saying, hey, yeah, we can get on board here. We can ban him too. We can ban him as well. You say it's like the run. Everybody's running. Oh, me too. It's the new Me Too movement, right? Me too. I'm banning him as well. Oh yeah. Well, I'm double banning him. I'm super secret probationing him. It's what it's like dominating the national news cycle. Also, four states holding primaries today. We'll talk to Brendan Kirby with Life's Edge and Yellowhammer News about that in just a little bit. Does, you know, you watch this during the midterm. Does the president showing up and giving his thumbs up to a candidate make a difference? We'll find out coming up tonight, and we'll talk to Brendan about that in just a little bit. Also on our list of things to talk about here, and by the way, I still don't have anything more on the square footage of how much of GulfQuest is being leased by the University of Alabama for their transportation school, but some portion of it. Oh, speaking of voting, too, that was a story, and it carried over from this morning. I didn't get to it. I thought this was pretty interesting. Mike Kaysen put this up over at AL.com. And if y'all remember the discussion of the Alabama Fair Ballot Commission? Remember how, okay, not in, when you go to vote, not voting for candidates, but you're voting for amendments, right? Ballot measures. We've talked about that in the past, how ridiculous it is that we'll see something that's for Marshall County or, you know, Lauderdale County, something out the other end of the state. But it shows up on our ballots, and then you've got to either do what you should do, not vote on it, or people go, oh, I don't know, let me fill in one. Not only do those things show up on the ballots, but the wording in them, remember the complaints about the word, I was one of them, complaining about how they were worded in almost a double negative legalese where people would be confused if they were voting yes or no for something. And the legislature back in 2014, because there was pressure, only because there was pressure, created their Fair Ballot Commission, which they said, quote, would provide a public a fair and accurate explanation of what a vote for, and what a vote against statewide ballot measures represents. That was their MO, right? Okay, so here's what Mike Kaysen writes. He said, want to read plain English explanations of the four statewide amendments on the ballot this November? And he takes you to a link to the Fair Ballot Commission, and I can just read them to you here. So these are, of course, you won't be voting on this till November 6th, but I give you a little primer on it, and this is in the plain English. All right, amendment number one that shows up on the ballot this year says, displays of the Ten Commandments can be posted at schools and on other state and local government property, provided they meet constitutional requirements, such as being alongside other historical and educational documents. It says no public funds can be used to defend the law if it's challenged in court. So that's amendment number one. That's the plain English version of it. Amendment number two that we'll see in November says it is the public policy of the state to recognize the rights of the unborn, including the right to life. It says the state constitution does not carry a right to an abortion or public funding for abortions. It would not outlaw abortion because the constitutional right to an abortion is established by the U.S. Supreme Court and it remains in place. We continue to do these amendments to put something on the books that's not going to do anything because of the supremacy clause. But there we go. How much would it cost in ink to do that? Amendment number three concerns the makeup of the University of Alabama Board of Trustees. And this is one where you can get lost in the weeds on it. But it says Section 264 of the Constitution of the State of Alabama requires 3 members from Alabama's 7th Congressional District, which includes Tuscaloosa, and 2 members from each of the state's other 6 districts to be on this Board of Trustees. Amendment 3 is intended to preserve that alignment of the board if districts change. Remember, we talked about the chance of losing a district here because of the recount in the census. It says it would keep that alignment even if the districts change. It says membership will be based on the districts as they were January 1st of 2018. There are concerns that Alabama, of course, could lose that district after the reapportionment in 2020. Amendment 3 does 2 other things. It would remove the requirement that UA trustees retire from the board at age 70, and it would remove the state superintendent of education's position as an ex officio member of the board. And number 4 of the items you'll see, you know, the ballot items, the amendment items, number 4, Amendment 4 would change how vacancies in the legislature are filled. This is ripped from today's headlines, right? The state constitution requires a governor to call a special election. The winner fills the remainder of the term. Vacancies that occurred late in this 4-year term required several special elections at the tail end of the term, including 2 that weren't decided until May. That was just a month before the primaries and the next full 4-year term. Amendment 4 would change the Alabama Constitution to say that the vacancies that happen October 1st or later in the 3rd or 4th year term would not be filled until the next regular election. So, for example, Kay Ivey matriculating into the Blunt Bench, going from being lieutenant governor to being governor. Situation, you don't run a special to fill that. If you have, it says, after October 1st of the 3rd year, if you have the vacancy occurring, then there would be no special. Now, people say, oh, that's good. We waste money on specials, right? Special elections. I don't know. That's a long time to not have somebody filling that position, right? I mean, if a vacancy in the legislature occurs, let's say, bring it to Southwest Alabama. Let's go Senate and House. That person is out of office for some reason. They're not there anymore. This would say we would have no special to fill the term. It could be a year and a half without having representation. That means a whole session in Montgomery could occur without a rep there. You make the call on that one. My call is, no. I'm coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Dr. Bill called for heat indices over 100 again today, and lucky for us, woo-hoo, we made it, right? 101 right now, 95, and feels like a delicious 101 degrees out there. But, I mean, not a lot of shock here. It's August. It's Mobile. It happens, right? We'd only have this to go from now until about, usually right there at the end of September. Well, end of this month in the past. Not every year, but I'd say more times than not, you'll get like a 2-day window. This is before Labor Day. You get a 2-day window of like some drier air comes in. Not exactly breaking out the festive cardigan sweaters, but it dries out a little bit. It gives you like a 2-day taste, and then it's gone. And then about the end of September, we get that first real dry front. I'm looking forward to that. It's ways off, but, you know. Hope Springs Eternal or something like that. Because, I mean, at some point, I'm going to have to start selling organs to pay my my utility bills around here. All right. So Brendan Kirby's going to join us in a little bit. We will talk about some of these elections going on today and what that means for the president. Also, I want to talk Manafort with him because it's looking like less than a great day for Manafort. I mean, you followed this, right? Rick Gates, special counsel, Robert Mueller's star witness, took the stand yesterday in the trial of former Donald Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, conceding to jurors that he aided his former boss in committing crimes. Gates served as Manafort's business partner for nearly a decade until 2016 when the two joined the Trump campaign. Asked by prosecutors yesterday to whom he reported during that time, Gates answered Paul Manafort. During his testimony yesterday, Gates told jurors that he and Manafort failed to report over a dozen offshore accounts to government and admitted to shielding several million dollars over the years, all which he said was at Mr. Manafort's direction. Gates pled guilty. I know, the new way to say it is pleaded. I can't do it. I'm old school. Gates pled guilty in February to charges of conspiracy against the U.S. and lying to federal authorities. Initially charged alongside Manafort, Gates has since cooperated with the special counsel as part of the investigation into Russian meddling during the 2016 campaign. All right, so we'll pick up that discussion, what it means so far, kind of how Brendan scores it. We'll do that in a little bit. Also, some story, a story about what the federal tax cuts mean to jobs in Alabama, what it's meant. It's not where it is in other parts of the country. Unfortunately, I mean, and I had that other story this morning about cattle farmers getting it on the chin when it comes to this tariff battle. So that's all on the way. We'll get to that in just a little bit. People asking for more details. on the Gulf Quest story. Listen, I just have what I have from the Tuscaloosa News. I link that through. The Tuscaloosa News story just says the University of Alabama has leased space there at Gulf Quest. How much it does not say, does not lay that out. Just says they have gotten some space down there. So I guess at that point, and what over on Twitter they're saying, well, that's Alabama taxpayers are on the hook now. Well, we're spreading the love. If we can get the rest of the state to help, you know, deal with our, you know, financial woes here in South Alabama, I'm for it. It's completely a Homer-like thing to say. And then this, let me add this to the mix. So yesterday at the beginning of the show, I started off with the defense of Alex Jones. Okay, I defended Alex Jones. I told you for 9 years I've been on here battling against the ridiculousness that comes out of that show. But when they go to ban and censor somebody like that, you know, for opinion, now I do defend the private entity or public company's right to make decisions business-wise, but the slope is very, very slippery when you do that. And who is next? Well, who is next? And this is why I asked this question yesterday. I said, this is why it's good to stick to principle and not sway with the wind all the time, as is the popular thing to do out there. Stick with your principle. It'll work in the long term. Short term, it may give you some grief. Long term, it will be the right way to go. And I said, if you jump at this or jump at that, oh, we ought to ban this liberal voice or this conservative voice or this other voice, then one day it's going to be something you want to say that gets banned. Saw this just pop up. Zero Hedge has it, which, you know, I mean, Zero Hedge is an opinionated website. This is not straight news, but the facts are the facts. Says here, one day after what appeared to be a coordinated attack by media giants Facebook, Apple, Spotify, Google on Alex Jones, whose various social media accounts were banned or suspended in a matter of hours, the crackdown against alternative media figures continued as several libertarian figures, including the Ron Paul Institute director, found their Twitter accounts suspended. So, who is next? Well, it looks like at least, although I don't know, other than this one person on here, I don't know any of the other libertarian voices. I kind of do dance in that ballroom, and so maybe can you be a fringe libertarian if you're a libertarian just by nature? Aren't you fringe? We'll ask Brendan Kirby. Brendan, what do you think? I mean, by nature, if you're a libertarian, you're fringe. So can you be a fringe libertarian?
Well, a fringe libertarian. I mean, that's almost sounds redundant, doesn't it?
Listen, I've gotten used to the insults over the years, so yeah, I just go ahead and take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, you know, I mentioned this yesterday when people get all on board, like, oh, we can't have those liberals saying this, and other people can't have Alex Jones saying that, and then one day it will be you. It will be something you believe in that will be. And it may not be today, might not be tomorrow, might not be this year, but one day it'll affect you, and you'll say, hey, I want everybody to back me up. Well, where were you when they needed you? We lose him? Okay. Get the connection back up. We'll get the connection back up, and then we'll get Brendan Kirby back on with us. That has been giving us a lot of grief here lately. But yeah, that's the story. Zero Hedge. It says the crackdown continues. Twitter is now suspending libertarian accounts. Let me go through here. Hey, okay, I'm looking at my Twitter feed. Is there anything that they could detect my libertarianism on the... I don't know. I have not been banned yet. I've got to get some kind of... Dalton, if we can get some camouflage on there to make me seem like something else so I can exist as kind of like the guerrilla fighters here, as some behind partisans, behind lines, keep me alive on Twitter for a little bit longer. Do we get him back on?
Okay. Yeah.
There we go. All right, Brendan's back on with us. Hey, Ben.
Hey, so I was going to say, what is the old saying? First they came for Alex Jones, but I wasn't a nut radio show host, so I didn't care. And
well, I mean, but that is... Yeah, eventually they do come for... I mean, unless you have zero opinions about anything, one day they will come for you. Not like, I don't think the van's pulling up at your house. I'm not Alex Jones, y'all. I don't think they're coming to drag you away. But they're going to come to say, you know what, now your speech is not defendable. Now, you know, I mean, I hate to sound so cliched, but since we've been saying it a long time on the show, we'll jump in the cliche wagon and say, you know, it's First Amendment rights are not there to protect comfortable speech. I mean, you're not protected from hearing things you don't agree with.
Right. The whole reason we have the First Amendment is not to protect popular speech. You don't need the First Amendment for that. You need protections to protect unpopular speech. And the problem always with any kind of rule saying we're not going to allow hate speech or negative speech or whatever is it's hard to define. You ask 100 people to say what is hate speech and what's not, you're liable to come up with 100 different answers. And that's the fundamental problem. That's why the founders put it in the Constitution and prohibited Congress from doing that. Now, of course, we have a situation where, you know, private companies have always been free to set their own rules. You know, one argument that's been made is when you have a situation like Google that has a near monopoly on information, do they fall, you know, are they almost like a utility that should be regulated as such? Now, that would cut against the libertarian philosophy.
Correct.
But, you know, there's an argument that Google is not just a regular company. It has the power to literally determine what we see and what we don't.
Okay, but I will still stick with, you know, defending both sides here. The private or public company's ability to make decisions. But the problem is, they better be ready to open up a new campus or a wing there to make decisions on what's okay and not okay. Because, I mean, this slope is so very, very slippery. The second you say Alex Jones, you're right. I mean, it's in the eye of the beholder or the ear of the listener of what is offensive and what is not offensive. And this goes down the line. And now... I think they could undo themselves by it, because eventually they would ban so many things that they would become irrelevant, right? I mean, if the only things on there are what's nice, you know, what's nice and doesn't bother any person out there, then what's interesting about it? Okay, I tell you what, we're gonna get whatever the link, whatever the squirrel that's gnawed through that line over there at the Kirby House, we'll get that fixed and get back from the break. All right, we'll do this run to the break, and then we will get Brendan back on. Reminder too, you can go to the website right now. I'd love for you to do this. Go take part in our online opinion poll question about what we were talking about last hour, the story that's been discussed over and over and over again. But I think it is interesting how tight the voting has stayed on this question. Should Governor Kay Ivey debate her gubernatorial opponent, Walt Maddox, before the general election in November? 52% of y'all say yes, 48% say no. That is moved by, now there's so many votes in it, it is moved by a percentage point or two, like day to day, but that's it. Usually we see swings go a lot more quickly in our polling. This is because the number of votes in it is not moving as quickly. And it just, right now, 52 to 48% yes. That Ivy should debate Walt Maddox. We get back, Brendan will join us. We will talk about those election day around the country. What the kingmaker is, Trump the kingmaker in these elections today. Also, we'll talk about what's going on with this Manafort trial, what this means. I mean, I read you the story, what was laid out yesterday, but some perspective on that from Brendan coming up in just a couple minutes. Head to the news break, check in with Dr. Bill, and then we're coming right back. Midday Mobile, right here on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And a bunch of texts coming in here, but this one, kind of what we were talking about a second ago. This texter says, Alex Jones and his ilk are intentionally saying provocative and indefensible things so just so they can get banned, so they can sell to their constituents that their conspiracy theories are justified. It's all a big game. How about this? Here's another wrinkle how big the game is. I've had this theory for a while that it is a shtick, right? That Alex Jones is playing a character, which is another reason why would you ban him? It's theater. It's art, right? What I'm saying is, for whatever reason, when you start this slope, and it is so cliched to say slippery slope, but I really think it is, when you start saying this voice versus that voice, now they're rounding up the on the edge libertarians out there, and they're going to ban them as well. At a certain point, I mean, it's going to be all of us. So there'll be like seven people left on Twitter. People from PR departments at teddy bear companies. That'll be about it. That's my best guess. All right, Brendan Kirby remains on with us using another telecommunications method to connect with us. And reminder, too, you can get his book, Wicked Mobile, not only on the end cap at your favorite local pharmacy right there next to the Andy Cap's Hot Fries. You can go online and get it as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go online to, speaking of companies with an outsized influence over how we live, Amazon. You can get on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. I was actually in the physical Barnes & Noble the other day, and they had a couple of copies in there, so you can get it the old-fashioned way as well.
All right, good stuff. I want to talk about a little bit more. We can talk about the Alex Jones stuff, but I do want to talk about the Paul Manafort story and I'm just read through what happened yesterday in this trial with Rick Gates, kind of spilling the beans, at least in the case of the prosecution here, that he was, doing all these things, but all at the direction of Mr. Manafort, right? That was the big tell?
Yeah, I mean, this sort of takes me back to my old days as a court reporter, and can I just say I am glad that I don't have to cover this trial, because these kinds of trials are dreadfully boring. I've covered a bunch of these cases involving financial crimes, and what it is sitting for 8 hours in a courtroom as the prosecution methodically and plottingly introduces one document after another, and it's difficult to pay attention.
Okay, but I mean, what is the Sullivanese of this? Give it to me in a way that I can understand it. When they say that, Gates, they said prosecutors yesterday asked Gates whom he reported to, and he said Paul Manafort. During his testimony, Gates told jurors he and Manafort failed to report over a dozen offshore accounts to government and admitted to shielding several million dollars over the years. And I'm not asking this rhetorically, what does this have to do? Is this with the collusion with the Russians? Is it because they owed money? What is the prosecution saying here?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with Russia. At least it has to do with, Russian election interference. It has nothing to do with that case at all. These are financial crimes that occurred long before they ever went to work for
Trump. Wait a second. It's painted out there in mainstream media as being the keystone to the whole Russian story.
Right. This is the big Russian prosecution that has nothing to do with Russia. Look, I mean, there are connections to Russia because Manafort's firm did some work for Russians and for the Russian-backed government in Ukraine. So there's that kind of connection. One of the people they did business with is someone who's under U.S. sanctions. So there are Russia connections, but it doesn't have anything really to do with Russia. And one way you can tell that is, if it did have to do with Russian election collusion, one, we likely would have seen charges to that effect, and two, good chance that Paul Manafort would have been playing ball and cooperating. And the fact that he hasn't suggests that Manafort didn't really have anything to give when it comes to Russian collusion. It's a simple case, actually. The allegations are that Manafort made a lot of money and didn't report it to the government and hid it from taxes, and two, that when he was running into financial problems, he lied to the banks and said he had a bunch of money for collateral to get loans when he didn't.
That can get you in trouble. Yeah. That is illegal. That gets you in trouble. The people that are saying that it's okay that Manafort did that, they're fools as well. That's bad. But I'm just trying to figure out how this, Paul Manafort seems to be in a pile of it right now, but how this deals with what happened in 2016, I'm having trouble with.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, and one of the curious, this will be interesting when this is all over years from now, if Bob Mueller is ever willing to explain, you know, how he operated and decisions he made, why he decided to keep this case for himself rather than farm it back to DOJ. That's what he apparently did with all the Michael Cohen stuff. They looked at that. They said, there's nothing really here for us. We're just going to kick this back to the Southern District of New York and let them prosecute it. I can't figure out why the professionals at DOJ couldn't have prosecuted this case as well, but he decided to keep it. But no, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, in a normal universe, when the president's campaign chairman and vice chairman are put on trial for bank fraud and tax fraud, I mean, that's kind of a scandal. It's, you know, not... that doesn't reflect well on the president. In the Trump universe, it's nothing.
Right.
I mean, you think about an ordinary president, you know, this would be a big scandal, and the media would be focusing on this incessantly. They've sort of glossed over that part of it because they want to, you know, paint it as part of the Russian narrative in some way, but nothing has really come out to suggest that it is.
All right. I want to pick up a couple stories from right here at home that you have up over at Yellowhammer, yellowhammernews.com. And one of them here is even after, right before I left for vacation, we're all talking about, you know, the jobs numbers and the tax cuts and the economy. But you have a story over at Yellowhammer that said study forecasts job gains from tax cuts, but proportionally less in Alabama than elsewhere. Are we losing this one, too?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we're not losers. We're winners, just not as big winners as elsewhere. This is a study from the Tax Foundation. They had put out a study in December looking at the House version of this tax cut plan, and they recently revised it based on the version that actually became law. And they used a model that they used to forecast how many jobs will be created as a result of the taxes, and you know, every state gains. They looked at it, you know, over the next 10 years. What I did, this is something I did, it wasn't in the original study, I looked at the 2017 population numbers for each state and figured out how many job gains per 100,000 residents. You know, you would expect, obviously, California is going to create more jobs than Alabama because it's got a lot more people. We're going to create more jobs than Delaware because we're bigger than Delaware. But how does it work out on a proportional basis? And on that number, there are five states that, you know, that grow jobs at a slower rate than we do based on the population. And that appears to do with the model that looks at, you know, how the taxes play out. And because we have such a progressive tax system, when you have a broad-based cut, rich people get more money because they pay more
they
money.
They pay more
in
money,
the first
yes,
place.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have relatively few rich people compared to a lot of other states, you know, and the corporate tax end of it, you know, we tend to not have as many really big corporations and people that own lots of stock. They're the people that are getting the big windfall, and they tend not to live in Alabama. So we don't have as much money on a proportional basis coming here because of that. So the job growth effect is going to be blunted somewhat here. So, you know, it's not that we're losing. I mean, you know, it projects every single state will have more jobs as a result of tax cuts than they would without them. It's just that, you know, we don't do as well. I mean, that's sort of that story, just you know, the story of Alabama, Alabama's economy in a nutshell, just generally, however you look at it.
I want to, before we get back to another story you have over at Yellowhammer, what a couple texts coming in here while we're talking. And Tony says this, and I think this is interesting. You know, we say, hey, what does it have to do, this Manafort case, what does this have to do with 2016 election? He said, it's pretty normal for the federal government to do such things, to look at most of the prosecutions against gangsters were always for tax evasion. Okay, but I don't know that, I don't think Manafort is smelling like a rose here, but does that mean that he was doing things for Trump at the behest of the Russians? I don't know. I mean, I'm not here to say I know what happened behind closed doors, but like this other texter said, how much did Manafort owe the Russians and how much did he get paid to work on the campaign? That's the rub. The Russia connection had everything to do with selling access to cover debts owed. I mean, but do any of us know that?
Well, no, and it's not alleged. And again, if Bob Mueller's investigation had turned up evidence that you know, that Manafort was acting as a liaison between the Trump campaign and Russia vis-a-vis the election, or was doing anything criminal in terms of the election, it's hard to understand why he wouldn't be charged with it. And if, especially if the idea is, well, we're going to leverage the charges against Manafort to get him to cooperate and spill the beans and tell us everything he knows about what Trump did illegally. One good way to do that is to fire up a bunch of charges on that effect and then say you can plead guilty to not paying your taxes this year, and we'll drop all these other more serious charges. They didn't charge him with any of that. I mean, we go read the indictment. There are some pretty serious charges in there, obviously, but nothing that has to do with Russian election interference. I'd say that's a pretty good indication that regardless of what Trump did or did not do vis-a-vis Russia, it probably didn't have anything to do with Manafort, or else he'd be charged. And if somebody has an explanation for why you wouldn't charge them with it, I'd like to know, because I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't. Right. You wouldn't save that, in other words, if you had it, presumably.
Right. And this is where I guess some people misunderstand that you could say one thing without indicating another. I'd look at this case individually and say, listen, Manafort is in a world of hurt, I think, on this, because he violated some laws pretty specifically. But to say...
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I'd point out, so much has been made over this Trump Tower meeting with the Russian attorney and the rock star, whatever, the pop star, who set it up. There are no charges related to that either. Manafort was at the meeting. So that's curious, too. I mean, that to me suggests that Mueller looked at that and determined that that didn't rise to a level of a crime, or he didn't have enough evidence, providing context to that he could support a criminal, charge there. I mean, this has been talked about like this is sort of smoking gun evidence that Trump was colluding, or he had the intent to collude, or whatever. Again, it's just sort of curious that if Mueller thought that, why he wouldn't have brought a charge related to that. Because remember, he charged Russians, with the election-related crimes, the Facebook memes and that sort of thing, and then the other group of Russian agents that were involved in the hacking. He didn't charge Mueller, or he didn't charge Manafort with that. He didn't charge other Americans
right.
with that. So it seems like he feels he doesn't have evidence to prove that against an American, or else presumably we would see charges already. So, at this point, I'd be surprised if there's a charge against someone close to Trump, that involves hacking, that sort of thing. And perhaps, as many have speculated, we'll see some sort of a reply. We'll see charges against Trump because the Justice Department says you can't charge a sitting president. But Mueller will presumably write a report, and maybe he'll have a lot of grist in there about obstruction of justice and sort of offer an invitation to Democrats, if they take control of the House, to impeach him over the obstruction part. But it doesn't look like there's any proof of an election conspiracy. And if there's not at this point, it's hard to see what stone he could uncover that would reveal that, because it seems like it's been a pretty thorough investigation.
You're right. What you're saying is if the card was there to be played, it would have been played already.
I would think. If he had this smoking gun evidence if you're going up the chain, like you've heard on cable TV news,
right,
we're going up the food chain, they're flipping, all the mafia-related metaphors they use. The way you would do this is you would say, we're going to charge Paul Manafort or Jared Kushner or Carter Page or whoever in Trump orbit you think actually carried this out, we'll charge them with this, and here's our evidence that they did this and this, and then we'll lean on them to quote unquote flip and give up Trump and say Trump, I plotted the hacking of John Podesta's iPhone at the orders of Trump, and then you do it that way. We haven't seen any charges like that, and again, I hate to predict with certainty that we won't ever see charges related to that. I'm just saying it seems like we would have gotten an inkling of that in an actual court document someplace, rather than speculation on cable TV news.
All right, come back from the break. More with Brendan Kirby from Life's Net and Yellowhammer News. Story that I've seen nowhere else that he adds up here as a Mobile law firm accuses television stations of colluding. Wait, colluding? It's back. Colluding to fix advertising rates. talk about that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 152 FM Talk 106.5. Continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby, LifeSet.com. Also, YellowhammerNews.com, author of Wicked Mobile. People want to find you online. What is probably Twitter the best?
You get a Twitter at Brendan K. Kirby. Of course, you can go to LifeSet.com and read national covers.
All right. Now, speaking of state, although this story is both local and I guess national, because it's the piggybacking on some federal class action going on is it says here, Mobile law firm accuses television stations of colluding to fix advertising rates. Now, explain what we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, this is collusion. I know everyone thinks that it has to do with Russia. But prior to this whole Russia controversy, what collusion meant was when companies would conspire to fix the market. The hallmark of our capitalistic system is a free and open market where businesses compete with each other and consumers win because you get the best price because, there's companies competing with each other. Well, what if the companies get together and there's not that many of them and they decide, well, we're going to set the price ourselves? That's collusion. That's illegal. That's a crime. The Justice Department is pursuing, according to a Wall Street Journal report that came out last month, the Justice Department is looking into possible collusion of Sinclair, which is the big TV station conglomerate that owns the ABC affiliate in Pensacola that we watch here, and Tribune Company, since those companies want to merge and form a super company.
Yeah, actually, they own
two. And the DOJ saying, we're looking into seeing whether you shared information about advertising rates, and then this Mobile law firm that advertises, its trial lawyer services on TV, they jumped on this and filed a suit against those two companies and the other three major television station owners around the country.
Right, so Nexstar is in the market. They own our news partners, WKRG. You have Sinclair with WPMI, right? You have EAR, Tegna.
Sinclair is WEAR, I believe.
Yeah, and also PMI. They're also
right.
Yeah.
So right. And also PMI.
Yeah. So.
So what you have is this law firm based on this Wall Street Journal. So I don't know if they filed it because of this or, if they were putting this together anyway and it just happened at the same time, but they cite the DOJ investigation in their civil complaint. They're saying, hey, we got screwed by having to pay more for advertising on TV because all these companies got together and they fixed the market. And it wasn't a true free, enterprise system where the companies are competing with each other and, you get lower ad rates presumably based on that. And they say some pretty interesting evidence that even though advertising overall is on the decline for television because of increased competition from cable and online sources, the rates are not going down like you would expect on something like that. And they're alleging it's because they got together and they shared information and they conspired to artificially keep ad rates high. So that is the crux of it. And it's this Mobile law firm filed a class action lawsuit in the federal court in Chicago on behalf of all similarly situated advertisers dating back to 2014. Potentially, if they were to win, not only would they win a lot of money, but there would be a huge sum of money that these TV station owners would have to pay, not only to this law firm, but to all other members of the class. Anyone who can show that they advertised during those years. So it's potentially a very, very expensive lawsuit.
And just a warning here, I'll use this for completely partisan reasons here, completely self-serving, another reason to consider advertising with locally owned broadcast companies like FM Talk 106.5 because we don't have anybody to collude with. So, because Lord knows radio people don't talk to each other.
Are you telling me you were not in on this meeting?
I was
when
not.
The bigwigs at Sinclair got together with Tribune and Nextstar and these other companies. They didn't invite Sean Sullivan
I didn't make the cut.
Figure out what the ad rate should be.
Yeah, I didn't make the cut. It's always like when all the accusations come out of who's being paid off by what groups in the country to say what things. And I say, hey, y'all, no, I'm saying these things for free. I wish I was getting paid by this group or that group, but unfortunately, I just do this because that's what I think. All right, brother, I want you to keep doing good work over there at Yellowhammer and at LifeSet, and we'll check it out on Twitter and Wicked Mobile. People want to get a back-to-school reading for mom and dad, right? They can get Wicked Mobile.
Yeah. What I should do is I should get the school system to make it part of the curriculum, like Daphne High School did last year with Waukee's book. That's what I need.
All right, there's some youthful like characters in Wicked Mobile, so yeah, it's for tweenagers.
Right, exactly.
Brendan Kirby, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right,
158 FM Talk 106.5. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. As we tick down the days to college football, how about that? Just less than a month away. It's too good. It's too good. See you all in the morning for Mobile Morning starting at 6.